It's like a big vat of energy, and all of that dies in, and then we're drawn out again to recreate. All the particles of the universe go back into the vat of the unknown to be drawn out again in purpose, a different purpose.
Yeah. Let's just for the absolutely
think about it.
It absolutely, and it's here in these different perspectives. Let me introduce to the podcast people who are listening. So I'm Angela Bertone, for those of you obviously that are here at the podcast, but I'm sitting at Rosella Sex's house in Indiana, and I'm sitting with two other guests, Miss Linda. Linda, what's your last
Linda
name?
Linda Melick.
Linda Melick and Sally Least. And do you go by Sally, Sarah, or just Sally? Either?
Sally.
Okay, so Sally. And then Jenna is sitting here with us as well. And we're talking about something called wonderful and what it means to be full of wonder. To be full of wonder actually means to be filled with all things possible. And we normally think of wonderful as just something that just describes what someone is. But there's actually a definition to the word wonderful. It means you're full of not knowing. And to be full of not knowing at first might seem like something that you wouldn't want. However, if you understand what a void is, Linda, if you would explain what you said a while ago is void.
All things potential and nothing material.
All things potential and nothing material. That means where the wave exists, but that which is contained within the wave has not yet manifested in a frequency that you could behold. So when you focus on one or another, that's what you get. And you can't just focus on it in your rational frontal lobe brain. Focusing on it with your rational frontal lobe brain will create a capacity in which to receive all things possible. So wondering is a great thing to do, just to wonder. If you wonder for 72 hours, you will actually create a neurological network in your brain to get the answer out of this vast expanse where all things are held. And truth is omnipresent because God is omnipresent. And you can call God whatever you want to call God. In understanding this, the more you're open, the more you'll know who God is, the more you know who you are, and the more you understand others. So not knowing who God is a really good thing. Because just wondering will draw the revelation of it to you. So to be wonderful is to be all things possible and
all things potential.
All things potential, but
nothing material.
And nothing materialized yet. Okay? So whenever you stay in that place, if you will understand it, what happens inside of your body will actually be something that kind of feels trembling. It'll be a turning. It's actually a vortex of energy. Now, if you don't understand what that vortex of energy is and it begins to be intense, you might label it incorrectly as anxiety or anxiousness, and you'll miss out on your blessing or the manifestation of whatever it is that you're hoping for. So if you understand that that trembling inside of you is actually an increased frequency manifesting in the body to produce whatever it is that you desire. Because God is so loving that God desires to give you your desire. It's what God delights in. The universe delights in manifesting love in the earth. However, if you don't know that you're loved and you're fearful because you don't understand what absence means, you don't understand darkness, you don't understand wonderful, then when you're in a place of not knowing, you may interpret that trembling inside of you as something bad. So if you're looking at it as it's good or it's bad, you're going to get that. And whichever emotion manifests more powerfully, that's what you'll get. So if you imagine that it's good and you're excited and that turning makes you feel excited and happy that something good's about to happen, that's literally what's going to chase you down and overtake you. However, if you manifest, oh my gosh, I don't know, this is horrible, I need to know, I need to find out, let me measure something. Look at the word measure. It's two words, me assurance. So if you need self-assurance, rather than knowing that, if the only reason I would need self-assurance is if I think there's something out there that's bigger than me that don't like me. But if something out there is bigger than me and it loves me, why would I care what present I'm going to get? Whatever it is, it's going to be better than I could hope or imagine. So needing to be reassured is evidence that you don't know that you're already loved. And that's what we work in the area of.
Evidence is not in material things. It's in things unseen.
Yes. It's in the things unseen. Yeah. And so when you stay in your imagination, that's where the things are unseen. They're still in the imagination state. And you, I mean, this home at one time that we're sitting in was in someone's imagination at one time. Mm-hmm. Then it manifested in a different form. It manifested into ideas and then eventually on a piece of paper. And then from a piece of paper to an actual manifested home that you can knock on wood. Right? So when you stay in it, when you understand that not knowing is beautiful and it's beyond that which you could hope or imagine, then what happens is you enter into a place of knowing that goodness and mercy and abundance is there, but you're just not, you don't know what it's going to look like. So it's like a surprise around the corner. And because you haven't collapsed on what it looks like, it's usually bigger and greater than you could hope or imagine.
So, and the manifestation that is a surprise is the gift.
Yes, it is the gift. What do you do when we give each other a gift? We wrap it up. Mm-hmm. We put it in a beautiful bag or a beautiful box, and we cover it with beautiful paper. We put a bow on it. And when you get that, you don't know what it is, do you? And because you don't know what it is, you get excited that something's in the bag. Guess what that is? That's a wonderful. That's a not knowing. That is a void. Because I don't have a clue what's in here until I open it. If I was afraid you gave me a snake, I say, never mind, I don't want to open that. See? Unless I love snakes. But if I was afraid of them. So basically what happens is from age 0 to 7, our neonet is formed out of our life experiences while we're still in a theta state of understanding, which means your emotions are very raw and you're calculating based on your sight, smell, taste, touch, and hearing, but mostly on what you feel. Okay? Because a child is like still developing all those things. And so when you develop a calculator in your brain that doesn't know if it's loved, it's going to see the world not out of all things possible and everything is good for me. It's going to see it as all things are possible and how can I protect me? And because you're expecting the need to be protected, you shall be. Right? If you are in a place of begging, it's because you don't know who you are and you don't have a clue who God is. You don't have a clue that God is love. Love is the most powerful thing known to man. In science, And we actually couldn't even measure these things in times past. Now we can measure. We know that compassion, care, compassion, appreciation, and gratitude are the four most powerful things known to man. And when we ask the question, how come we can only measure it like 7 to 9 feet from the human body? It's not because it stops at 7 to 9 feet from the human body. It's because we don't have anything big enough to measure that. So there's something called quantum entanglement that we now are studying. And what that shows is once you've been entangled with something, you're forever connected to it. And so you're entangled with love. You were created in love. You are forever entangled in love. So even if you travel through this life and you move away from love and you experience something called fear and the unknown and you don't know your love, once you get to the end of that, you will resonate back. And you will find that you're loved. It's the way things are created. So you can't not find love.
That's a wave.
Yeah, and when you land on the particle that says, see, I knew I wasn't loved.
And then the wave, as long as we're not observing it.
Oh, as long as we're not
observing it and not measuring it, it still exists as a wave.
That's right.
But the minute we look at it, it becomes and collapses into a particle.
The minute we label it as good or bad, the minute we measure it.
Judge it.
The minute we judge it, that's right. The judgment itself is what causes you to collapse on it. So you collapse. Will hear me collapse.
Could you?
Collapse means that, okay, if the wave is doing this and the wave all of a sudden contracts, it becomes a particle. Mm-hmm. So it collapses in on itself.
It's literally an implosion.
But I was, that's what,
which is,
word,
e- which is exactly what happens inside
here.
Of you.
It's
the same thing that your DNA does. Your DNA is a vortex that's like this, spinning, and it's doing this, so it's spinning and doing this, and it's intertwined and it's connected with these little ladder rings, which is what I believe Jacob's ladder is in the Old Testament, where he wrestled with God at the place called Peniel. Because in the place called Peniel is where these things happen. That's where your imagination is. That's where your visions are. And that's the part of us that gets calcified when you self-protect, including fluoride. If you protect your teeth with fluoride, it will calcify the pineal. And even Christ, he said, is your heart still hard? Do you still not see? Is your heart still hard? Do you still not hear? And the pineal is actually called the third eye. It looks like an eyeball. It works like an eyeball. I had somebody tell me one time that, you know, that was demonic, the third eye. I said, well, let me tell you something. So are you saying while God was inside me, my mother's womb, sewing my foot together, whatever that looks like, that the devil, like, jumped in and put an eyeball in my head that was evil? I said, I don't think so. That's crazy. No, God created my pineal. It's for me. Yes. It's not against me. And ancient writings even say that even if there is anything against you, I'll make it for you. So even your own fears that are working against you, whether you realize it or not, when you eventually collapse on an idea and you judge something, and that is what you judge is what manifests.
That's collapse.
When that manifests, it becomes solid. It's like hitting a brick wall. Mm-hmm. When you hit that brick wall, you're going to bounce back. Now the next thing will happen is you'll either move back into that fear, or you'll bounce back and you'll observe what the fear is, and you'll learn from it, and you'll begin to wake up. And as you begin to wake up, you'll say, oh, I'm getting what I believe. I am what I think. This revelation comes to you. And then you say, well, what do I think? And then at that point, when you begin to say, what do I think? Guess what you begin to do? You begin to separate yourself, the true you, from your thoughts and your ideas and your memories. And you can look at them and observe them.
That's the power of now.
That's right. Then when you can observe your thoughts, when you begin to observe how you think, you can see whether or not you agree with it.
That's in the movie, What the Bleep.
I didn't know that was in there. I mean, I watched it a long time ago. Mm-hmm. But that's what's happening.
She observes herself.
You begin to observe yourself. You observe your thoughts. And I teach people how to do that. I teach you how to become the observer again. Because if you don't know you're an observer, you'll stay one with your fearful thoughts. And you'll stay trapped in the cycle. And you won't be able to get out until you can observe your own thoughts. And then you go, well, I don't even agree with that thought. So when you see them, that's why truth is what sets you free. I say truth plus nothing sets you free. Because when you can see the truth, all of a sudden you're no longer entangled in that old memory. Because that old memory said, if I was loved, why did God let me be born to a daddy that would abuse me? If I was loved, why was I born to a mother that would betray me or abandon me or give me up for adoption? How could that be love? Because we're made from love. Our own bodies understand what love is and what love is not. But it gets twisted. It gets like a spider web. If you look at the neurological network in your brain, it looks like a web. And it's also called branches. It's called a limbic brain. A limb.
Yeah.
And it's also called a diencephalon. When you die in yourself alone,
alone. That's cool.
Yeah.
Diencephalon.
Diencephalon. Yeah.
So when, and the diencephalon sits inside the limbic system, which is on the area here, and then you have the neocortex around it.
Yeah.
And the pineal gland and the pituitary gland. The pineal gland's back here on the hypothalamus.
Where's the pituitary?
On the back.
So, but it's highly connected to the diencephalon?
It's a system. It all works together.
It's a system.
It's a system of working together.
It's a neurological system.
Yes. It's a calculator.
Yes, it is. It's a biological calculator.
Yeah. And the calculation of it is so unbelievably fantastic that we could spend probably forever trying to understand it and just get bits and pieces. But one of the ways I explain this calculator is the primitive part of that calculator is hide or fight. Hide or fight. It's what an animal does. We call it fight or flight, or the animal instinct. I call it the beast mentality, or the calculation of a beast, the calculation of a mark, or the mark of a beast. And in the book of Revelations, there's something talked about called the mark of the beast.
This is exactly what Brian Simmons is saying.
Okay, I don't know. Yeah, I haven't read what Brian Simmons wrote, so I'm glad there's someone else saying the same thing. But what happens is that there's a story in there about a woman called the Whore of Babylon. Well, the whore of Babylon literally means one who trades words. One who is a trader of words. Like, I'll say this and get that. Well, we don't realize it, but we actually bend the air when we speak. Mm-hmm. We are bending air, and when you bend air, you create waves. With your voice box, but you also create waves in an unspoken voice inside your tummy, or the seat of the soul, the heart. Mm-hmm. And so as those things speak, we may not realize it, but most of the time we're double-minded. You've got one mind thinking one part, yeah, which is your frontal lobe part, which is your risk and reward, and I'm going to get punished, or I'm going to get good reward. Let me calculate through here. And that is the deceptive thing, because we thought that we were living from here. I'm going to choose to lose weight, and therefore I'll do it. I'm going to choose, yeah, to stop smoking cigarettes, and therefore I'll do it. And then it don't work. You know, so what is it that you're actually living out of? We now know that 95% of every action that you take, it's a minimum of 95%. A minimum. So that means it could go up above 95%. A minimum of 95% of everything we do is done through our subconscious brain, which is where your emotions are married to a belief system that is digitally and it's magnetic and electronically coded in something called a fatty molecule in your brain. It's a chain link molecule. Mm-hmm. And that chain link molecule holds within it not only all the facts that your frontal lobe is aware of, but it also holds a digital code of chemical ligands of everything that happened just prior to whatever emotion you had. It's called a T minus one memory. So T stands for time. Minus what? Minus one measure of time. How much measure? We don't know. It could be a nanosecond, it could be what, but your body measures it, because if you get bit by a snake, you have a capacity to go back in time. Your brain can go back in time and retrieve and record what happened 7 seconds before the snake bit you. Why? So the next time you're walking down a dusty road, the next time you're walking down a dusty road in the same, all you have to have is two or more events happen like what happened right before the snake bit you, and your body will immediately go into fight or flight. Mm-hmm. It will release cortisol and adrenaline. That's called the mark of the beast. Now that can save your life, you know, from a snake. But remember, when Christ, Peter or Paul got bit by a snake, it didn't even hurt him, right? Because he wasn't collapsed on all the this is the way it has to be. He wasn't living out of his knowledge of learned experiences. He was living in the now. He lived in all things are possible, rather than what happened yesterday in that timeline.
And the difference between, we call it living from your personality, which is all the things you've experienced, mm-hmm, and living from the other part of you that's separated, that can observe your personality.
Yes. So, the true identity.
Yeah.
And you can actually,
the eye looking at the personality.
You can actually change.
Yes.
You can change your personality. That's what I do. That's exactly what your session is about. So I have discovered, and I discovered it in scriptures, in the book of Lamentations was one of the first places I found it. I found it in Ecclesiastes. I found it in Proverbs. I found it in Ephesians. It's in a lot of places. It's in Revelation. But it's throughout the ancient writings, and even now with the Nag Hammadi and the Gnostic writings, they're just confirming what was written in our English version, which is extremely limited. Mm-hmm. The English version of ancient writings is, if you don't understand Greek and Hebrew and the Gematria and geometry even, mm-hmm, and the pictorial messages hidden inside each letter, mm-hmm, then you won't understand these things you can't see. This information came to me.
Has shapes in it, you know.
Yes.
That, yeah.
And the shapes are not flat. Like, mm-mm, like if I was to show you a picture of a tree, and I drew a picture of a tree on a piece of paper, and I said, "Is this a tree?" And you say, "Yeah, that's a tree." And I'm like, "No. Let me take you outside. Let me show you a tree."
They're holographic.
Yes.
Yeah.
See?
Not pictures.
So
they're two three-dimensional pictures, holographic.
And the Sanskrit is what we would call one of the languages that has been like divides people. Well, language is what divides us, period. At one time, the Tower of Babel, that's right. And when you erect the word and you make the word more important than the frequency of the word.
Wow.
You see, you think that I can say a word, I'm just going to name it, claim it. That don't work. That's why you can put post-it notes all over your card, on your mirror, in your kitchen, and you can have great intention, and you can imagine, and you can do your brain board or whatever those things are called. And some people will get it and some won't. The reason the secret works for some and not others is because there's been a missing link. The missing link is the negative charge. Everyone says get rid of the negative, get rid of it. You cannot even contract in order to go forward without a negative charge. You can't have a light without a negative charge. The female is a negative which receives the positive so the two can manifest. Void is what is called negative. All things possible are called negative. When you get rid of negative, you get rid of all things possible, and you only are going to have what you collapse on because that you haven't left a negative. So the negative is the part missing.
We're talking about third dimension here. We're not talking about fourth.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we're simply talking about word, manifestation of word, how word divides us, how your belief system creates everything. Think about it. If you're made in God's image and God's a creator, what are you? You're a creator. You just don't know you're a creator.
Amen.
And so you're collapsed on, I am this body. That would be like me saying, I am this house because I'm in it. No. Exactly. Now my body will manifest what I hold to be true about my own self, the real me that lives in this body. And it will manifest whatever I hold to be true about God. So if I think God is trading me, I'm going to be good and God will bless me, that's what I'll get. And that is the mark of the beast. It's when I do things right and when I'm good, then I'm blessed. That's where it's called a pit, where the false prophet and the Antichrist are. So what are the false prophet and the beast are. So what is the false prophet? It means to divide anything incorrectly. It means to measure. Well, guess what? Are you able to consciously, with your frontal limited lobe, divide anything eternal? No, it's not possible. Your heart, on the other hand, can divide. And it divides, and it sees all things as God. All things is for me. Nothing is against me. And
all
so
is equal.
Everything's equal. Nothing's lifted up.
There's no hierarchy.
No hierarchy. None. That's why he said don't esteem one above another. Because if you esteem one above another, you're going to get that. You see? And you stay in this pit. The pit is judgment. That's the pit. Mm-hmm. And you've got to come out of the pit of judgment. How do you get out? At the revelation of God is with us. That's what Christ means. Christ means God is, well, Jesus means God is with us. Emmanuel, Yeshua. Listen at the word Emmanuel. I am in you all.
Emmanuel.
Emmanuel. And what do we call a book with all the answers in it? Emmanuel. You see? Emmanuel. That's what we call it. So when you take the English language and you begin to marry it back into the Sanskrit, what you can find is this will work in any language. Mm-hmm. Because every language that came out of the original language is a hologram of the original language. It's a part of it. Mm-hmm. So you take a part out and you actually have the whole within the part. That's what blew my mind fractal. Fractal, yes.
Oh, fractal. That is, okay.
Okay?
Yes.
So even though, let's just say that all I have is the King James Version of the Bible, okay. And I don't have any other version. You were talking about Brian Simmons a while ago. Could I find what the ancient writings say in that limited version? Yes.
Wow.
Yes, I can. Why? Because you can't take the whole out of the part.
Wow.
That's why.
Exactly.
You can't take the whole
and
out of the part.
You don't read it with this.
There it is. There's the key.
That's right.
My words are spirit and they're life.
And they're not carnally discerned.
Yeah.
And so the first time I ever heard of quantum physics, I was asleep in my bed. I wake up and I see these little bitty, I thought they were dust particles floating and the light was shining through them. And they were like fluorescent green. And so I'm looking across the room and I thought, what is that? Like they were really sparkly. And then I realized there was no light shining in that corner of the room. And I said, oh my goodness. Like I was like all of a sudden like kind of startled, right? Like what is that sparkling in the corner of the dark room? And those light particles floated, like floated and landed on my nightstand and formed into a Granny Smith green apple. And I went, and when I did that, that was fear. That was the unknown startled me. And when I did that, it disappeared. And I said, oh God, what was that? And he said, there's coming a time when you're going to need to manifest matter, and I'm going to show you how. And I was like, oh, yay, I'm never telling anybody this. This sounds crazy. So 2 weeks later, someone gives me the DVD, What the Bleep. I had never known any of this. And at first I wasn't even going to listen to it because in my religious binded, self-righteous, better than thou mind, mm-hmm. I was stifled because I was like, these people don't believe like me. Well, guess what? If you keep listening to what you've always been listening to, you're going to get what you've always got. Wow. And I wasn't having everything I always wanted.
2 weeks later. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so 2 weeks, it comes to me. And so God is already speaking to me, all sorts of things. I've had lots of visions and dreams by this point. And God's saying, Angel, are you scared? I'm like, well, till you put it that way, yeah, I was. But God's challenging me.
But wonder brought it.
Wonder's what brought it to me. Like, I wonder what that was. So within, I mean, it could have been 5 days later. It was just a very short period of time. This woman hands me the bleep. And it's talking
it's
about
funny,
it's light
what
particles.
I first said when I came
I know it. Yeah, I couldn't wait to tell you that story. Yeah. So when did you first hear about what the bleep?
Oh, yeah, when they were producing it.
And you were at what school? Where was that produced?
At the Rhonda School. Yeah. But no, the people went there.
Okay.
And they got all of the training that they put together with that to make that movie.
Right.
And then the two producers were there, Mark and Christy. I can't remember their name.
Well, you know, there was a time when science opposed spirituality. And spirituality opposed science, which they needed to be opposites. Because in order for something to come together, it must go apart, and then it comes back together. It's actually the third letter of the Hebrew alphabet. It's called Gemel. It means love. It means charity. It means to go away in order to return. And if you look at an atom, that's what it's doing. It's separating to come together, separating to come together, separating to come together. And God separated everything so it could come together. Separated the waters, the land, the light, the dark, the night, the day. He even separated Adam. In that particular story, Adam and Eve were one, best we could figure, from the ancient writings.
They were.
And then he divided them. And when I searched that out in the Hebrew language, and I wrote it down, it was like 10 pages. One sentence was 10 pages, 9 to 10 pages. And the sentence was this: it is not good that man should be alone. Now, if you look at the word alone, it's the word all one. Because everything is in twos. You may not realize it, but everything's in twos. And so whenever I wrote all the 9 pages out, I was like, man, how do you make this into a sentence? It's so long. It's like you couldn't say all those words because you would just confuse the heck out of somebody. So as I began to meditate over this, this is what came to me from the one sentence: it is not good that man should be alone. This is how it reads in what I wrote. It says, it is not our most beautiful best to leave her encamped on the inside of the city. Let us take her out of him, that she might stand before him as his opposer, as his opposite, that they might be one and copulate and multiply. Because you can't have multiplication without division. It's not possible. So, but what happens when you're looking through the judgment eyes of this and this, you'll judge one as good and the other as bad.
Wow.
Rather than they're one. You don't good and evil is one.
Wow.
It's not what you think it is. If you go look in Isaiah 45:7, it says, I, the Lord God, I create light and darkness. I make good and evil. I do all these things.
Yeah.
Eve, all is what the word is. It's dark, all. It's all darkness. I make all good. I make all light. I make all darkness. I make it, saith God. And so why would God make Eve all? Because nothing that exists didn't come from any other place other than void. It comes out of darkness. Eve is what we call the first woman. Evening is named after her. It's in the evening that you see the reflection of the sun off of the dust of the moon. And so it's in our dark moment of not knowing that the light has a place to pierce and then shine back out. It's just like a woman's body. When a woman has a void or a womb and you go through the canal or the darkness and you pierce the hymen. Hymen means to be broken. It means it's the same word as Christ. It's the same word as Messiah. It's the same word as anoint. It literally means to pierce. So when that is pierced, what does light do? Light pierces the darkness. So when the male pierces the female and it deposits there, in that all things are possible. And what carries it there? Semen. Why? Because God wants you to see man. He wants you to see man. What does God want man to see? Who he is. Why? Because if you see who you are, then you see who God is. That's why Jesus said, if you've seen me, you've seen my Father. He understood these things. Other religions, you know what they call Christ? Not a master, the master. Why they call him the master? Because by age 12, he had conquered the ancient writings and could manifest matter. He could walk through walls. He could walk on water. He could do all those things that all the other ancients were attempting to do and couldn't do before him. So that's why they call it Christ-minded or Christ-centered. Because they looked to him as the master. They didn't meet anyone else that's been written of that we're aware of yet that could do those things. He appears to be the first. And then that's what the King James says, that he's the first among many. Yeah. What are the many? Us. Mm-hmm. We're the ones waking up.
Yes, we are.
It says in Romans chapter 1 that in our imagination we have corrupted the glory of God and the truth of God. And we've likened it unto a corruptible man, a beast, a four-footed creature, or a creeping thing. And it's in the imagination, which is where we're going to work today. Mm-hmm. We're going to go in through the same place you put anything else that you want to live. We're going to go through the darkness. We're going to go through the unknown. We're going to go through what some people call the dark night of the soul. We're going to look for those places that are the most darkest to you. Why? Because what you're going to discover, it's in that very place that we get into the amygdala, the chain link molecule. And when we get in there, it fires up with energy, magnetism, and all the memory, even if your logical brain's not aware of it. All the memory fires up that chain link molecule. When that chain link molecule is fired up, it's what Jesus talked about when he said, that those things that don't produce fruit, we'll cut them off and we'll throw them in the fire. So when it fires up, we're going to deposit new information through the imagination into that chain link molecule. What are we going to deposit in there? I don't know. I'm going to say what I hear my Father say. I'm going to say what I see my Father do. And sometimes I see myself me doing it. Why? When Jesus said, I see my Father do it, he saw himself doing something. Why? Because he knew him and his Father were one. So sometimes I'm working with somebody and I might see myself put water on their face, and I'll put water on their face, and it works. Why? I don't know, but Source, God, the Father, Holy Spirit, knows all things. And so I trust that whatever I need has to come to me. I stay out of my mind, my logical mind, because it makes no sense to the logical mind. And if I'm in here, I'm measuring. I'm trying to do something right and not do something wrong. If I'm trying to do something right and avoid something wrong, I'm going to miss it.
That's why they call them schools of mystery.
Yes. And look, miss story. Dirty.
Yep.
We have a his story and a miss story. Mm-hmm. And Eve is the miss. Mm-hmm. Darkness is the female. God said he would rule with a rod of iron in the last days. What is that? It means the thee. It means that which is heavy and dark, not light and shiny. It's bulky and it doesn't feel good. And it's the weight of the world that you've been carrying. So we're going to go in through that heavy thing. Why? Because your mind, your frontal lobe, thinks it's dark. But your spirit says, aha, yes, a place for the light to pierce, where all things are possible. Mm-hmm. And we go in through that place. And the way to get there every single time is to let the emotion flow. Let your body tremble. Let your tears cry. Why? That's the hypothalamus pumping chemicals into the body. And it's recreating the past inside of your body at that moment. And now you're outside of time. You literally step outside of time when you go back into that moment. And you're stepping back into time. So you're outside of time and you're inside of time at the same time. And that's what it means to redeem the time. Why? Because when you lived it the first time, you deemed, I am not loved. That's why it's a dark night of the soul, because you deemed you're not loved. So you go back in it and you redeem it. And what happens when you redeem it?
Yeah.
It changes your belief system in every cell in your body.
There's something called neuro-linguistics programming, NLP. And they work with timelines. And there's an associated timeline that you are in the belief that you hold your beliefs. And there's a disassociated one that is not affected by that belief. And so when we take you out of that and put you on a dissociated timeline where you can look at everything, and we go back 10 seconds before something happens and then see where you are.
T-minus one, yeah.
And we take a jumper cable and we put it past that event. then all those memories and reassociate it into your other timeline.
That's right.
It cancels.
It rewrites it. It redeems it. All things become new.
Yeah, it's all different languages. Yeah. Still.
We're just using a bunch of the same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Yeah, I'm just trying to take the language that yeah, most of my listeners are listening to, right? Mm-hmm. Most of my listeners have these same, most of their belief systems are going to come from the Bible. And so if I use only the scientific language, then I miss them. If I use only the scripture language, I miss those who are studying science. And I want to bring them together. I don't like having the disunity that we have, because that's why our earth is in such disunity. That's why we have poverty. That's why we have war. That's why we have all these things, is because we see ourselves as separate and apart rather than as one human race. We are one family. And we let our religions and our sciences and our beliefs divide us. Mm-hmm. And God is science. Scientists now, back in the day, you saw a lot of scientists that wouldn't even believe in it. Now they understand. A lot of them call it source. I don't care what you call it. Do you know that Paul didn't care what they called it? Mm-hmm. Paul walked into a temple, mm-hmm. and it was all what they called the heathen gods.
The unknown, yeah.
And he was not offended Mm-mm. at all. As a matter of fact, he walked up, unknown God. I know him. But that's not what I was taught to do. I was taught to stay away from anybody who believes something different than you. Mm-hmm. Really? How am I ever going to unite with them? God said, I reign on the just and the unjust. He said, love those.
We are all one.
We're all one.
They're all one. So if your neighbor's poor, you're poor. Mm-hmm. If your neighbor is exalted, you're exalted. You know? So, I mean.
That's the same thing Jesus said. He said, if you do it in the least of them, you've done it to me.
Exactly.
And he said, I pray that I'm one with you. Mm-hmm. He said, Father, I pray that they would be one in me and you, even as we are one. And then he said something even more profound than that. See, it's easy to believe that you can be one with God and I can be one with God and you can be one with God. But it's not easy to believe that I could be one with you as I'm one with God. Mm-hmm. And that's what Christ prayed.
Yep.
He said, I pray that they would be one in each other, even as you and I are one. You understand? That is the most powerful prayer that I've ever heard spoken or written, is that a person would pray that me and you would be one in each other, just like we're one with God. And you know where you're not going to have that oneness? In your frontal lobe. Mm-hmm. Why? Because you're just a tad different in where you're sitting.
I can't remember the name of it, but it's called the Visa Pressa. This is what one.
Visa Pressa.
Mm-hmm. It's in the universe.
It's where the two touch.
Yeah.
It's where we overlap.
The overlap.
When I was in Chautauqua,
I think that's what it's called.
Chautauqua Institution a couple years ago, mm-hmm. and I was laying on the floor just meditating, and I saw, well, actually I heard and I saw. I heard draw a dot and put it above. So I drew a dot in my mind and I put it up here. And then I heard, now draw a dot below. And I drew a dot below. And then I heard, now connect the two. And so I connected the two. And I heard, what do you see? And I said, a one. And the Lord said, yes. He said, now where's the most powerful part? And I went, the in-between part. And he said, yeah, because without the in-between part, those two opposites can't know each other. He said, now I want you to write a positive on one and write a negative on the other and leave the one in between as a neutral. He said, that's where all the power is. Oh, wow. I was literally in Chautauqua Institution and a few houses down. That's right. And if you look at a number one or a dot, see the dot?
That is so cool.
If you look at a number one, watch this. A one, if you were to look at it dimensionally, would look like this.
Yeah.
Oh, a cylinder.
A cylinder. Remember, cones and rods.
Cones and rods.
Cones and rods. Everything's a cone and a rod. You put these two together, and guess what you're going to have? You're going to have a cone where these two meet.
Exactly.
So the cones and rods, you have to have both.
They're opposing cones.
If you look at a radio, it's cones and rods. You look at your eyes, cones and rods. Look at your cells, receptors, and everything is a receiver that gives. Source is the only giver.
Right.
Source is the only giver. And so God, the word God means giver. It's the word gemel. It means to chase you down and overtake you. There's a scripture And that used to really hurt my heart until it was revealed to me what it means. And the scripture was, it's harder for a rich man to enter the kingdom of heaven than it is for a camel to go through the eye of a needle. And well, I've heard all sorts of teachings on that. And I was like, well, gosh, why would we want to be blessed then? That doesn't make any sense. Something doesn't fit that text. So I kept meditating, kept praying over it. And then I went and looked it up. And it literally says this. It will be harder for God to abide in heaven and not chase down the poor and overtake them than it would be for, it'd be harder for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than it would be for God to not chase you down. In other words, God can't not chase you down. Mm-hmm. Love has to chase down the one who doesn't have and deposit himself into it. So it's in other words, it can't not exist. God can't abide in a place of bliss and if God is love, right? Can God abide in bliss and leave you in non-bliss and say and be all-powerful and be loving? No. So that's what that scripture is talking about. That God will not abide in a place of bliss and leave you in destruction for eternity. Now that messes with your mind based on everything you've been taught. But love can't fail. Love cannot fail. It's not possible for love to fail. That's like saying God could fail. An all-powerful, omnipresent, omnipotent, omniscient, sovereign could fail. See, that's messed up. So when you go in and you change the brain in the places where you've experienced the darkness, where you don't feel love, where you don't feel God, where you feel like, God, where were you? Why did you let these things happen to me? And say you love me. You don't realize you're doing that, but you are. When you go in and you answer that question, and you can do it through imagery, you can do it through a parable. I do it through my imagery. And I just tell people, if you don't believe like me, that's okay. Just pretend that we're pretending. It'll still work. I don't know everyone else's language. So I speak in my language and I ask them to pretend that my language and their language is the same language. I work with people who are agnostic. You don't believe God exists? I'm like, well, you believe in gravity? Like, yeah. I'm like, okay, well, let's just work with gravity then. Right? And they get healed. And then they want to know more about what I believe. Why? Because I loved them. I didn't try and fix them. I didn't try and make them believe what I believe. I showed them how much I love them and how valuable they are. And how important they are to me and to gravity, right? And then they're like, I want to know more about whatever you think God is. And so really what they want is, I want more love. That's what they're saying. I want more love. I want more acceptance. And then when you show them, you can't not be accepted. It's not possible for you to not be loved. That changes everything. But it's got to get into the subconscious brain. And the only way it gets there is through sorrow and suffering. It gets there through pain. If you go look in the Greek text of the New Testament where it says, no man cometh to the Father but by me. Look up that word me. And look it up in other ancient writings. It literally means no man cometh to the Father except through sorrow, suffering, and toil heartily. It means dark night of the soul. It means you can't reach the light unless you go through the abyss. And what is the abyss? It's the same word as Jordan. That's what they had to cross over. They had to cross the Jordan. It's the same thing. We just don't hear it that way because we've heard the allegorical flat surface understanding of the English version of ancient writings. And because that's what we've heard, that's all that we know. But that's no different than you tell babies or little kids where babies come from. You say, well, God gave you to me. And they're like, oh, yes, God gave you to me. You know, gave me to you. And then I remember when my son was little and he said, Mama, you know, how did God give me to you? And I said, well, God gave Daddy a seed. And Daddy put the seed in my tummy. And then like a plant, you grew. And then you came out my tummy. He was so happy, that was all he needed to know. As he got older, he said, Mom, you lied to me. I said, no, baby, I didn't. He said, yes, you did. I said, no, God did give Daddy a seed. It just wasn't in his hand. It didn't look like an orange seed. He didn't drop it in my belly button. And you didn't ask, and I didn't tell you. But I didn't lie to you. That's what your brain formed around the words that I spoke. And now that you're older, and you're finding out the whole truth of how it got there, it just creeps you out a little bit. And he said to me, Mama, are you and Daddy going to have any more babies? And I said, no. He said, good, then you never have to do that again.
With that, I got to go.
Yeah, okay, we'll stop the podcast too. No.